portfolio committee on police, also a word of welcome to the National Commissioner, General Sithole and his team, also to the unions, SAPU, as well as POPCRU, and also the Social Justice Coalition, and all other related civil society organizations and the media. You are very much welcome. Honourable members, just a few program announcements for this week. Members, tomorrow, of course, we will have a full morning of dealing with the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill. There's two organizations, SANIF and the Media Diversity Project, indicated that they also want to make submissions to the committee, and we agreed. So we will take that apart from the other input. We will also tomorrow make available the legal opinion from Parliament on the issue of the Section 75. Bill issue that was raised by members, and of course the Civilian Secretariat will also deal with the issue of the financing part that was raised by members. Now members, because we all we're going to receive those input very late tomorrow, we will not go ahead with the Friday meeting, so I just want to indicate to members that the Friday meeting will stand over so that we give enough time to the drafters and the team to take tomorrow's input and consolidate that in the document for in 2 weeks' time when we go to the clause by clause process. So I just want to give that indication to honourable members. Then in terms of today's program, members will remember that towards the end of last year we received a petition from the Social Justice Coalition outside Parliament. I think most parties were present, where they again raised the issue of resources at the various police stations, the issue of fixed establishment. Of course, it's not a new issue from the committee side. We've interrogated it on a regular basis during this term, but it's quite critical that we get today further input on the issue. There's a new national commissioner, there's a new minister, so I presume we're going to have a new approach also with regard to that. So that's really the aim of today. So we will get input from SAPS. There's also presentations that we distributed from the two unions. And I think, yeah, also the Civilian Secretariat on Police, welcome also to them. They're also going to make a short input because they're also busy currently with the research project on the issue of fixed establishment, so that we thoroughly look at the issues at hand. Maybe just to indicate as well, in the State of the Nation address, the President incidentally also raised this issue. We said that the key focus this year will be the distribution of resources to police station level. This will include personnel and other resources to restore capacity and experience at the level at which crime is most effectively combated. So it was raised by the National Commissioner, and of course we as a committee also in our recommendations last year indicated that the policing model should make provision for equity of police services in urban, rural and deep rural areas and geographic divides. This includes clear provision of police resources to historically disadvantaged areas that does not discriminate against areas that have disproportionately high crime rates or is economically disadvantaged. So that is some of the references for today's meeting. Members, just before we start, just a couple of issues I just want to raise quickly. Yesterday we had another incident of a police officer killing a family partner and himself, and that follows the incident at Lentegeer a couple of weeks ago. Of course, it's a societal problem, but it's always a concern for us from the Portfolio Committee side if police members are involved. And I think at previous interactions there was an indication in terms of the wellness programs that is available to members, but once again from the Portfolio Committee side we want to highlight the importance that when members are in distress or there's members with certain challenges, that police management at station unit level should ensure that the necessary protocols are implemented. And of course, family members must also assist the South African Police Service to highlight those issues. So, National Commissioner, it's a very important issue. I think in previous interactions, more SAPS members are killed off duty than on duty. And also again the issue of firearms availability to members who've got certain challenges, it's quite important that we address that. So I just want to flag that with you, that we deal with that. Secondly, I think since our last engagement last week, there was another couple of cash in transit incidents that is really worrying. And again, the issue of specialized units is quite critical. That's the, and crime intelligence. Unless we deal with that two issues head on, we're not going to solve it. So we just want to flag this. The National Commission indicated he will come back to the committee. I don't know whether it's today, but at some stage to give us a briefing on the cash in transit environment, what's being done, what's the cooperation of SABRIC and the banks. So we will be looking forward to that. Right, thank you very much. Honourable Colonel Barnard, you raised your hand.
If, as we have a new National Police Commissioner, perhaps I could raise it again, something I've literally raised for a decade. We know that the whole macho ethos within the SAPS does not lend itself to anyone in the SAPS going for psychological debriefing. After, they've had bad incidents, they've either been shot at or killed someone or picked up body parts or scraped up what they go through the most horrific instances. And I've always said, if only the SAPS would make it mandatory for every operational member to go and have psychological debriefing once a year, just so that your psychologist could actually come and say there may be an issue here. But they need like a clearance certificate, because how many times have we sat there and heard that usually a man has gone home, killed the children, killed the wife, killed himself. It happens over and over and over again. So I think, please, if you can sit down with a team and just give it some thought to how to deal with this matter, to try and, as the chair says, pick it up before a catastrophe happens. The second issue is this business of members taking firearms home. I watched a clip recently where a member walking on his own to a train station was attacked from behind, beaten over the head with a hammer, over and over and over, and his firearm taken. Walking alone with a firearm, it's perhaps something that should also be looked at. Walking in instances through areas which are a threat, but they have no option but to get to work. So, again, need some sort of intervention, perhaps in terms of transport, on the part of SAPS. But that was just another thought I'd like to raise with the new commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member on these issues? Thank you very much. Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. If I may, very briefly, I just took a quick glance at the online reporting about this issue. And it seems there had been a domestic violence report 24 hours before the shooting. The one article does indicate that the service pistol was seemingly removed from his possession, but then just a question as to how he ended up with a firearm afterwards, because even if it was a private firearm, there's supposed to be, as I understand, a removal of all firearms when somebody has that kind of domestic violence implication on them. So if at some point perhaps provincial management could give the committee some feedback on whether there had been full compliance after all prescripts to prevent a high-risk situation like that escalating. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Klungu?
No, thanks, Chairperson. No, mine will be a bit different, a slightly different, Chairperson. You know, I think maybe at times Chairperson will have, either as a committee together with national management, give ourselves time to look into the question of support mechanisms, particularly to junior members, given by management. I'll make a typical example of the issue that I have forwarded to you, Chairperson. When one dedicated member is trying to combat illegal activities taking place within the organization itself, only to find that senior managers simply muzzle or use everything to muzzle that member up until that member gets paralyzed. And that such a person is a real living bomb. I was shocked, Chairperson, that a member, whom I think in one of the meetings we raised the matter with national management and there was interventions, subsequently that member was charged internally, brought under tremendous stress through these internal systems. And you won that case? That member is hiding somewhere today in Gauteng for having done justice to defend women who are being abused within the system of police. Now, how do you actually explain that? I think, Chairperson, because I have made an undertaking to that member that in this meeting will have to actually then take critical decisions to this, that if General Ngabela did investigations and found senior members of having derelicted from their own duties, yet the member who became a whistleblower gets actually then, what do we do? Does it mean that within the police we promote criminals? And eventually then, when those criminals get killed in their own dirty actions, we then pretend as if then police are being killed, when we know that those police, I don't want to mention names, and people, Chairperson, are better judges. People know who are corrupt police officers. When then we pretend as this committee, and we even, during even death, we actually then raise the flag of the country over those people. People as judges say, it means these people protect criminals at the expense of us as communities. People know who are the police officers who are running drugs. You can go here in Khayelitsha. You can go even with this violence ravaging here. They will tell you the names of police officers who are busy trafficking drugs. Some in KZN running guns and all that, and caught in action of their own line of evil activities. What do we do with these things? When police officers who are honest try to come to the fore, unfortunately, we don't even hear the unions on these matters. How are the unions taking up these matters? Because these matters appear, Chairperson, to be very, very serious. Thank you.
Thank you, Mimis. We must just a short input. I don't want, because we must move on the Bolsonaro.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just get an update, Chairperson, on coming back to the psychological services, which is, I think, very, very important. At one stage, I know there was a problem with medical schemes and there's not enough psychiatrists for the police itself and they don't want to pay extra. Can I just get an update on that? Thank you.
Any other member? Right. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I'm going to ask yourselves to introduce yourselves, then the National Commissioner, then we can deal with these issues of public interest and then we'll go to the presentation. Let's get the introduction from the members.
Dumelang bagaitso. Lina la ka kena enji mo le batsi ke le lokola committee e mme ke a lo leboga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Jerome Maguire, a member of this committee.
My name is Philip Mushong, a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sanbonani Ikamuza Kelembele, member of the committee.
Hi, I'm Diane Kolobarnard, also a member. Thank you.
General Sitole, your delegation. Thank you.
Skies voorzitter, ek is hierso, al dink jy nie, ek is hierso nie. Goeiemôre, ek is Pieter Groenewald en ek is 'n lid van die komitee.
Well, remember, you're sitting with the officials, so we couldn't...
ek net hierso baie lede vanoggend hierso, ek het nie eens gesit nie.
General, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, good morning. Chair, our delegation today, I'll just introduce them and they will make an indication. The first one is Lieutenant General Ngwenya, Deputy National Commissioner for Human Resources. The second one, Lieutenant General Masemula, Deputy National Commissioner Policing. the third one, Lieutenant General S.C. Mvazi, Deputy National Commissioner for Management Advisory Services. Maybe it's just also important for me to indicate to the committee that these Deputy National Commissioners have been rotated. They've rotated the functions. I think General Mvazi from Management Services to Management Advisory Services, and the General Skete, whom I'm also introducing as Deputy National Commissioner for Management Intervention, has rotated to General Mvazi. Then Lieutenant General Vuma, Deputy National Commissioner Asset and Legal, she has rotated to General Skete. Lieutenant General N.P. Masia, Divisional Commissioner Visual Policy. Major General J. Mahatu, Component Head Organizational Development. Major General L. Rabi, Component Head Strategic Management. Brigadier V. Naidu, Spokesperson for the National Commissioner. Brigadier S. Madafela, Section Head Executive Secretariat. Colonel K.B. Stain, Parliamentary Services Strategic Management. Then there's Brigadier Mushi from OD. Colonel Kwebe from OD. And Colonel Devki from OD. This is the total delegation, Chair.
Thank you very much, General. Then we will ask Popkru. Popkru, Secretary General, can you just introduce your delegation?
Thank you, Chair. Myself, I'm with Matthew Parks, the parliamentary officer. Thank you.
Sapu.
Thank you, Chair. Pope Inika, the President, together with the Deputy President of SAP, Tumumu Kodise.
Then Social Justice Coalition.
Dali Vayas, co-head of programs from the Social Justice Coalition.
Thank you very much. Yes, maybe just an additional question to the National Commissioner, because we want him to respond to the issues in the public domain. National Commissioner, you made now a very important announcement. You've made some shifting of portfolios in your top management. Can we just get maybe again who's who in now and the rationale for that? Because it's an important discussion that I will also come to the fore, I think, in the next topic.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think, firstly, General Skete has moved from asset and legal, and then to management intervention. Then General Vuma has moved from management advisory services to asset and legal. And General Mvazi has moved from management services to management advisory. The first reason is that as an organization, we have formally introduced the succession plan. And then for us to be able to beef up the succession plan, we need all our senior managers to have multifunctional orientation. They need to master all the functions at that particular level. But also, in order to stabilize things within the organization, we also want the team to work together and we source different inputs. It's a horizontal, that is rotation. So the same rotation, we will also do it at divisional commissioners level and all other levels. But the important of it is just multifunctional orientation. Thank you.
Thank you for that explanation. I think in further interrogations we will take that forward, but thank you for that. General, maybe if you can just just address the issues that members raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think, firstly, let me start with the height which the Honorable Chair has raised. I think, firstly, with the heights, we
started designing a special combating plan in order to counter the heist. This particular plan includes a high response team. It's a medium and high response team. We're mobilizing both the TRT, the NIU, and the task force to provide a response, because the nature of the modus operandi, it's a bit militaristic. When they retaliate against the police, they actually retaliate in the form of a military. Then these people or these particular contingencies, they form part and parcel of the activation plan. Then yesterday, I've been in a meeting with BAC, the security companies. Then I also met with SABRIC and Consumer Goods Council. We have agreed on an integrated partnership plan, which will be taking off now in April. Then within this particular integrated partnership plan, we are bringing in the cash movement strategy, because there's been no cash movement strategy that is in the country. This cash movement strategy, we're going to convene before the end of March. All security companies, all stakeholders, SABRIC as well as that is BAC, all of them, they have committed to provide activation and response resources in the form of helicopters and other resources. So we're going to have one activation center where we're going to be dealing with this. We've also further agreed within the same plan, we are going to have a special list of wanted that are actually wanted for similar cases. Over and above that, we have also activated the OFTA strategy. I think I've spoken about the OFTA in the previous meeting, and they were targeting syndicates. And here we are specifically focusing on the cash in transit syndicates, but we are addressing them, that is, covertly. So that is the response at the present moment. And yesterday I also had a meeting with the minister where we decided on a hard combating approach in order to stabilize, that is, the heist. Then, Honorable Chair, there is the question that has been raised by the Honorable Member on the debriefing of members. I think, firstly, we buy the input, and I think we are going to strongly consider it so that it happens. But over and above the debriefings, that is, of members, this also came out of the meeting between myself and the minister also yesterday. When I started the turnaround strategy, I commissioned an organizational climate study. That climate study is in progress. I'm sure it's above 80% towards finishing, because it's driven by General Ngwenya. And we also agreed with the minister that we need to know exactly what is the problem in the organization, what is it that members are experiencing. So this report is going to help us so that we are able to respond to the findings by means of a structured action plan. Beyond this, myself and the minister, we have also planned, we are going down to the members. I think we'll be flying all 9 provinces. We want to talk to them face to face, and we want to share the experience that they come across there. And we will then also listen to their inputs. And when we come back, we're also planning a response, taking it back downwards. The question of transport, it's part and parcel of this police safety plan. We decided that let us look at a sustainable way of providing the safety of the members. But it starts with where they reside in. I think some of them, they reside in areas that are highly unacceptable, which we think we want to change. And on a longer term, we are also looking at an idea of a police estate where we can get police together and so that we can be able to safeguard them. Then the member who used the firearm, I think we will investigate the matter and we'll provide a report to the committee. Then the support to the to the members. I think I want to start with the very same exercise that we've decided together with the minister, that we're going down to them. And we will obviously provide them with the support that they need, because we're going to issue instructions on the spot. I had already started this exercise here in the Western Cape, where I actually shared a turnaround vision with them and I engaged with them. There's quite some few instructions that we also give that is on the spot. With regard to the corrupt members, I think the honorable member indicated that members of the public know, which we will first ask amicably that if they could come forward and inform us, because we would be able to deal with it drastically so. But over and above, we've got mechanisms within now that we are dealing, that we used to deal with the, that is the corrupt members. It's on the reactive as well as the proactive side where we're trying to address corruption, but we condemn it in the strongest possible terms. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, General Sitolo, for that input. I think we take note of that. Right, let's go then to the business of the day. We will then start with the SAPS presentation, followed by Social Justice Coalition, and then Spokru, and then SAPU. So let's go to SAPS. Thank you, General Sitolo.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Our presentation shall be led by General Mahato. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members of this committee, distinguished guests from Social Justice Coalition Group and the labor movement and media of the press, members of the media actually. We can go to the next slide. We will take you through this request that we give you a brief on the process of how we do the fixed establishment at the police station. We'll take you through the profile of the organization, and specifically looking at the phases that we have evolved in since the dawn of democracy at police stations. Just a brief preview. We will also give you a profile at national level. There's a specific message that we also want you to acquaint yourself with what is also contained at that level. And there will be an integrity study that was done by the Civil Secretariat. The representative from the Civil Secretariat will deal with that one. And maybe some issues that we're talking about, the THRR, maybe. Just not to confuse you, the THRR is a demand instruments that we are utilizing for police station. Let's go to the next one. Now, in terms of this presentation, as a content building, was just to brief you on the model that we are utilizing currently to resource the police stations. And we talking of the models for police stations, talking about the 1,147 currently, just to correct that figure, number of police stations where we are. It also talks to the satellite police station, the contact police stations, and the mobile contact. But all those satellite contact and mobile contacts, they are accounted for as police stations. So the fixed establishment at police station level includes those specific bullet points that we have indicated. And we will also be telling you that currently out of the SAPS total fixed establishments, approximately 120,000, to be exact, is 124,75 posts that are dedicated to police stations in the country. And that percentage, I think, will be able to tell you that it is 60% of the total SAPS fixed establishment. And if we have to increase our ground coverage, we have to move that 60% to a specific percentage, but we'll be able to talk about that moving forward. But there are also other specialized units. We did not mention all of them, but we just mentioned a critical ones that you would acquaint yourself with, that we have made a commitment to resource them or to capacitate them. That talks to your POPs, your K9, your FCS, and your TRT. Now, the resourcing of this also competes with the resourcing of the police station. I think that is the intention that we are indicating to you. But we also want to indicate to you that as far back as 2012, we did what we call an accessibility study with all the government departments. I think we are also requested to do that, led by the Department of Public Service and Administration. We concluded that exercise. It reflected a very serious, ambitious requirement that we need to accomplish for the community to access policing services. So practically what we say is, from that study, we actually know what is the demand for policing station, and we're using the word ambitious. Given the current methodology of putting police station, it is unachievable. But we have to do certain things to achieve that, and those may include issues like your mobile satellites and so forth. Out of that, we were able to reduce the accessibility challenges to a reasonable level in different categories. We had the 4-kilometer radius accessibility, the 8 kilometers, the 16 kilometers plus, and so forth. So we were able to deal with that information. We can go to the next one. Now, precisely coming to the police stations, what we are using, we're using what we call the demographic information, which talks to the population trends, the migration, the socio-economic and political factors that we collect data from police stations. And some of the information are the information that we read on what is happening with regard to the crime rate, the public protests, and the likes. This information that use the demographic information, it is a very exhaustive information that we are utilizing currently. We have developed it internally for over the years. We have reached a point where it was tested, it was questioned, and we are amending as we move along. We believe that it can be better. We are not saying that it's the best in the whole world, but I think the Secretary will be able to talk to us around that one. And out of that, we were able to define the magnitude of our police stations by giving them specific categories. We've got the smallest police station, which is category A, as a captain, and we'll be able to tell you what are the threshold of a captain. The category B, which is a lieutenant colonel, category C1, it is a colonel, and category C2, which is a brigadier. And then we went further and utilized the classification of the police station in terms of their locality as defined by the Department of Local Government and Traditional Affairs. They're using the three elements so far and some definitions around that one. We have heard a lot of people are arguing about those issues, but those are some of the issues that we are battling. For now, we're using the standard that we believe that the custodian department is utilizing, rural, urban, and rural mix. And one of the outcome of the accessibility studies that we did had to give us certain information that talks to the police station infrastructures, the suitability accommodation, and your IT equipment. We were able to identify some, but the exercise is not concluded. I think as we move along, we'll be able to deal with that moving forward. But I think you yourself may be knowing that there are challenges around accommodation. The type of a police station. If we say police station is category A, what would be the features, the physical features of a category A as compared to a category C2? Those are the things where we are going. But we have not yet gotten there, but we felt that we should be able to indicate to you that journey. Can go to the next one. Now, the next slide is purely a process that it's been followed. In simple terms, it says at the top, we collect demographic information that talks to the three factors that we have mentioned, the socioeconomic factor, population, and crime trends, and plus many other things. There's a whole list of them in terms of the form that we completed. We just grouped them into the three primary ones. and also included the workload that is taking place at the police station, because we've got registered. Some are manual registered, some are on the IT system. We collect those information that would determine the workload. We have done work measurement. We are able to determine the average work time that it would take to do that particular job. And those information, once we have collected them annually, updated from each police station, it is able to give us what category of a police station it is, like we said, A, B, C1, and C2. Now, that process we started some years ago with phase one. Phase two, where we are at phase three. It has evolved over a period, and as and when we adjust, we get comments that we must change this and whatever it is, we do all those configurations and we decide to move to the next phase, because the next phase got different attributes that we have to deal with. That is where we are. Now, where we are at the THRR that talks to or that informs the fixed establishment, and I think that is the decision that we wanted to make. Now, the THRR is the theoretical human resource requirement. It is a demand. Now, the fixed establishment, it is what we've got money for, like from the compensation budget. If we can go to the next slide, just wanted to move on that one. Maybe just go backward and a bit. The fourth phase is where we're going to do monitoring and evaluation. But because of the challenges that we have to deal with, particularly before we go to phase four of monitoring and evaluation, we have sought to introduce what we call discriminatory assessment. Now, we say discriminatory resource allocation for specific reasons. Currently, we said everybody equals in terms of the ruler that we use. But we know really that not everybody equals. Then that is where we are going to get what are the differences in each specific area, i.e. the rural and the urban. You cannot use the same ruler in terms of discussing about your population. Secondly, there are other elements which were being advised that maybe the instrument that you are using is too complex. Some of these elements may not make the necessary sense. Maybe you would rather take them out. So those are some of the issues that we take in the comments that we get from interested parties who come and advise us and adjust our system. And that will lead us into the second phase. And we believe that we will be able to rename it something like your personnel allocation model or whatever that will happen. Now, the next slide talks to, if we can go there to the next slide, talks to the similar phases, all the phases that we have reflected up to phase three, how the structure started, starting from 96, 2000, and 2012. If you can go to the next one, you'll be able to see what the structure was. I would not want to explain the structures, but just to show you the picture that this is what the structure was when we started with this process in 1996, immediately after our democratic election. And we immigrated to the next phase, the next structure, that looks like this one in 2000. That is a police station with a captain and a superintendent. At the time, we were using the civil ranks. And then the other bigger station, which was a superintendent and a director, looked a little bit different from the smaller one. There were two categories at the time.
The talking difference, General, between this two and the first one is you took crime intelligence away from those latter two, but you can go ahead.
That was what happened. Yeah, that was what happened. And then where we are from 2012, we've got the category A, as we have indicated to you earlier on. That is how the structure looked like. You can see it's very much involved. We're trying to reflect all mandatory functions that must be performed at a police station. But because it's a smaller station, you would not have a full range. You would have those that are essential at that level. Some, for instance, they do not have courts within their fold. The next category is category B, the lieutenant colonel. A little bit bigger than the category A and broader, which means that their mandate and their functionalities has more responsibilities, when we also justify our assessment tool and the very same assessment tool that has been used by the broader public service in terms of grading of the post level for commanders. We did that one. Then the last category, C1 and C2, are the same structures, but they've got different management position levels that are defined. We just wanted to reflect so that you see where the things are. The next slides talk to the process which we collect data. And I think that is a very, very critical phase. Now, the collection of data at the end determines the resource requirement of a police station. So far we're talking about the personnel, the human resource. Now, the philosophy is garbage in, garbage out, because we're using technology to collect this information. At the police station, people who are at the police station responsible for these responsibilities, they take all the registers, all the demographic information, and put it on the system, and it goes to the provinces. It goes to and be verified, and the results are taken out at national level and returned after confirmation and finally verified, returned back to the provinces. Now, that reflects the demand. Now, the process of the demand now fit into the resource development of the organization, where you go into the medium-term expenditure framework or strategic framework and begin to say, with the budget that is allocated to me in the medium-term expenditure framework, how much can I afford from the demand that it is set? And we would come up with the fixed establishment. Now, that fixed establishment, head office will go to each province and say, province, this is the total number of posts that you are allocated according to the budget that we have for all your police stations. That is also defined in terms of the Police Act. The National Commissioner does that allocation. And when it gets to the province, the provincial commissioners will use the very same instrument plus his own discretion. And that his own discretion, that is what we want to put in between phase 4 and phase 5, given the complexity that the provincial commissioner understands about his police stations, but remain within, because a precursor rule is you must provide each police station with at least the minimum requirement, which I will be presenting into the next slides. Let's move on. Now, the minimum requirement of each police station in terms of the category is what you see in there. A category A station, we say any number below, but the minimum that we have determined is at least 86 to 90. It is the smallest station. A lieutenant colonel, it is 91 to 180. A colonel, 181 to 360. A brigadier is 361 and higher, because that is the highest level of a police station that we have. Now, here the message is, we have made an assessment. Most of our police stations are not able to be resourced at the lowest limit that we have indicated. We have made the calculation, 600 of them are in that street for additional for capacities to at least be at the lowest level. And I think those police stations are some of the policies that our oversight bodies would go and say that this police station is under-resourced. We agree, we know that information. I think the question that would be asking is that how are you going to to close that gap, and I think we'll be able to talk to that as we move forward. Can we go to the next one? Now, the next slide is that block that you see there. It is a form that we utilize to collect information. It's a very comprehensive form that we use to collect all the demographic information from that police station. And out of that, we are able to get a structure that talks to the station around the operational environment, what are the demands around that site, and what are the demands within the support environment, and that will give you the total figure that is required at that police station. Remember, it is also made in terms of the functional structures that I've shown you, those structures. We are able to say, for instance, within the CSC, this is the workload and this is the human resource requirement that you require in that specific environment. In terms of the THRR, it becomes a challenge when the fixed establishment and the THRR has a huge gap. And that becomes a challenge of the police station, and I think the implementation of that becomes an organizational challenge that we are trying to deal with moving forward. If we can go to the next slide, I think a picture of saying from all those categories that you have of the police stations, what is the profile within the subs that you are having, and we are saying 134 of the police stations in the countries, which is 12%, are your category C1, are your Brigadier police stations. And 246 police stations, which also is 22%, are your full kennel police station. So the structure, you will have a full kennel and lieutenant kennel on the other three levels, and then the rest will be those other ranks that you are having. And we say that lieutenant kennel, I mean that kennel police station, all of them must have at least a minimum of 181 personnel. Now when we say some of our police stations are not at the lowest level, you would find a police station which is a kennel with less than 181 personnel, and we say that it is under-resourced. And how are we going to make sure that that police station gets the resource? And that is the challenge that I think this presentation would seek to indicate to you how we want to deal with that. 313, which is 25%, are your lieutenant colonel police station, and 452 are your captain police stations. Now, some of these captain police stations, just to mention, are those police stations, because they are the very smallest police station in the farm areas, in the rural areas, and so forth. So those are some of the smallest police stations that we have recorded them in our registers as police stations. The next slide. The next slide, basically, if you can continue pressing, it's an indication of what we have presented to you. And say, on your left, it's what it is demanded from what we have collected the information from wherever and use our IT system, whether wrong or right, but that is what it gives. We believe that there is a high percentage that of accuracy level, but we also believe that there is a lot of improvement in that area that we must go through. Then we take it through to the MTF process, and the budget compensation, for instance, says this is how much we can afford. And given all the levels that we are having for the police stations, for instance, we realize that the third area we cannot fund. And what we can fund, it's the line number one and line number two. And that line number one and number two becomes your fixed establishment. Now the question is, what do we do to ensure that we get to the third area that we're in? On annual basis, there are discussions that we take it with the Treasury. There are certain adjustments that we're trying to make in the organization, but it is still one of the challenges that we are mentioning to you. The next slide. The next slide, very difficult. I think the message that we wanted to indicate to you around that one, if you go closely, and I'll just try to indicate which area I'm reading. If you read the top left on your slides, it says national and provincial. And you go in those columns, there's a column that reads 2016-2018. That is what I will just try to explain. We do it every year, and we do it for each every MTF, and when we change our resource reallocation every year, we update the document. Now, it says head office has got 50,000 posts, which is 25.19% of the total fixed establishment of the police. And I want you to hold it with that 50,000 posts, because there is an explanation that I'm going to explain to you earlier on. Because the 50,000, that is what our reporting mechanism is. But our operational mechanism is different. I'll be able to explain to you moving forward. And then the provinces are sharing for the same year, 2016-18, 140,000 posts, which is plus minus 14%. The provincial units, that was the divisions, ne? The provincial units, the provincial offices excluding the units are having 27,000, which is 19%. The clusters are having 1.23%, which is 1,082. And then the police stations is 120,470. Remember earlier on I rounded up to 120,000, then the figure is the one that I'm it's right there, which represent 80%. Now this 80% is the 80% of the total allocation for the provinces. It excludes national. If we go down again, the distribution of posts for police stations, and we go to the block on the left that talks to police station 2016 to 2019, it says 120,475, which is 60.29%. There's a difference between the 80 that I mentioned. Now, this 60% is the total fixed establishment of the police station in relation to the total fixed establishment of the subs. The other one was in relation to the total fixed establishment of the provinces. Now, the cluster still remains at 0.92%, because now we're taking a bigger picture. The provincial units takes 17,729, which is 8.67%. The national unit takes 16.82%. The provincial offices, which is 5.34%, and then the national office, which is 7%. Remember, we mentioned the national office in the first block having 29%, which is 50,000. Now, if we take specialized units that are at national level, which is close to 16%, we remain with plus minus 7% only at head office. I think that was the message that we would want to indicate. Now, this document becomes a master document for the fixed establishment of all units in the organization, and it has to be signed, or it is signed annually, and it is what the monitoring Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, when they come and check whether we have done that, we will be able to indicate to them that this is how we have distributed our resources. You can go to the next slide. Now, the next slide is not visible here. It's just a picture of the national head office microstructures, how it is. I think at some stage we did present that to you. Then go to the next one, the provincial structure, almost similar. Then the next one, it's your cluster. Now, with the cluster, if I have to take you a little bit back, remember at some stage we were having 176 clusters. We took a process of doing the assessment whether they are functioning, the 176. We made certain adjustments and we arrived at 118 number of clusters. So we were able to reduce the number of clusters with a comprehensive structure for it to function. We are still in the process of implementing it and adjusting it. And maybe at another appropriate time, if there shall be a requirement, there shall be some discussions around where are we going around the cluster, how do we enhance them, and so forth.
General, sorry, how many people are currently in the cluster system? How many staff members?
We've made provision for 1,832. Yeah, we can go to the next one. The next slide talks to an acknowledgement that the demand that we are having at local level for police station, it's huge and we are not making dents. We have to do something different to make dents. I think on several occasions we have approached the Treasury hoping that we will be able to twist their arms and they allow us some additional compensation budget to increase our footprint at the local level. We are not successful. And we have taken a scenario that in the next few years we will not be successful, but we'll keep on trying. But in the event that we are not successful, what are the things that we must do? And part of the things to do to increase our footprint talks to rationalization. Now, rationalization as an initiative has a lot of other things. I'm just giving you an understanding of what are the things that should happen. It talks to reorganizing yourselves without compromising the delivery of your mandate in terms of quality and quantity, but with less resources. Point number one. Point number two, you reorganize your work organization to an extent that you increase your bottom, but you reduce your top. That is another one. The other one would be you reorganize by clustering certain services that you believe that are able to be clustered and see how far you can go to increase your bottom, because our challenge is to increase the bottom. But the other one is to say, where are you having gaps that you are not addressing in terms of your work performance or your utilization of resources? Identify those and begin to reorganize them to ensure that they are directed or de-escalated to your local level. That is in brief concept. Now, what we saying was the concept of the initiative exercises practically said, at local level, what you need functional, trained police officers. And the areas that you must begin to look at are your functional areas within the organization that can give you a leverage. And we started a bit at head office with number of divisions that are mentioned there. We could not conclude, but it is still waiting for a process to move forward. and we have identified some of the things, some of the areas that can be considered and negotiated and consulted. But it also has to take the proper process of consultation with Labour and probably with this committee to say this is the fuller picture where we're going, and then there is a consensus and support and buy-in on that specific. We felt that we should just indicate to them. Now, within the rationalization, there are many other things that come. So, and we say the rationalization will become our highway forward. Now, the off-ramps and the in-ramps would be the things that must join the highway as we move forward. We can go to the next one. The next one also shows some of the second phase of our rationalization, which we believe that I think come 1st of April this financial year, we may be starting to begin to see some of the quick wins around that over a period. We'll talk about that one. Areas around supply chain management, personnel management, technology management, and management intervention itself. Phase 3 would be your national and provincial units, what we can do. Now, I mentioned the 50,000 that comprise 16% of units which are accounted for at national level, but operationally at local level. What that means, at the local area, there is no mandatory command and control for these specialized units that are accounted for at national level. So the expected outcome of operationalization that we want to check is to say how many of these national units, of this 17,000%, can become localized so that they are able to add capacities at local level. Remember, we said part of the rationalization is to begin to identify the gaps and see how can we begin to deal with those. And one of those gaps are the utilization of the resources that we are currently having. We are doing that, but we have reached a point where we cannot bleed anymore, and one of those issues are begin to consider those. The very same thing are those provincial units that we would want to give them a footprint at local level. And if we are able to do that, one of the shortest or the quickest win is we may move from 62% of the fixed establishment of the police station to 65. It's plus minus 5,000 that we can begin to deal. It's the resources that we are having. It's not new resources. That if that it is plausible, that can be done, but for now we have tested it. It is possible. It's just to move forward and begin to deal with that. The second part of it is also to correct our reporting mechanism as required by the Department of Public Service and Administration in terms of the billion dollar reporting. That is the HR tables that we still have to record, because once we begin to move people around, your reporting mechanism as required by legislation must also be corrected. Let's move to the next one. I think the next one is just an updating that in some of those issues, the report have been completed. There are financial commitments, particularly those areas that we call them are SS-wide government processes for regrading of the lower levels. The lower levels in this instance are those people that we have appointed in terms of the Public Service Act between level 4 and 1. So that process is concluded, and I think we are in the process of implementing each financial year in phases as and when we are able to have the financial resources to do that. We mentioned that because it also put pressure on our compensation budget, that as we do our compensation budget, but there are these social issues that we must deal with regard to our members. We can go to the next one. Now, the next slide is the restated fixed establishment. If you recall, there was a time when we were talking about the fixed establishment of the South African Police Service at 199,000, almost 200,000. Now, all of a sudden, we are 195,000. Now, the pressure that we had with regard to the compensation, and there were a lot of other things that the Treasury also requested, a lot of other things that happened in the organization, that had to make us to restate our fixed establishment in relation to what we can afford, as was provided for in our compensation budget. Now, currently we are at 195,000, so we reduced from 199 to 194. And we are able on the last slide to reflect some of the challenges, because we wanted to indicate to you that what happened, not the very same slide on the last block. The last block that talks to the gaps and the shortages.
So, 5 minutes, then you must finish.
Yeah, okay. Let's
go to the point. The members got the presentation. Let's go to the...
Okay, The next slide. The next slide just indicate in terms of our senior management where we are. Currently, we do not have any post that is vacant. You can go to the next one. It indicates how we have divided ourselves at national level in terms of the division. Then the next one slide is a continuation of the first top executive management structure. You can go to the next one. The next one where it is shaded red. That is what we wanted to reflect to you, that it is where the senior management positions were moved from 2015 to 2016 and 2017. We increased our footwear. You remember when we were enhancing the clusters and when we were creating other units. This is the number that has moved that, and they were necessary structural adjustment, but unfortunately they took a lot of our compensation. Now if we go to the next slide, we want to justify that even... Okay, so it's fine. Okay. Continue. Yeah, quickly, yeah. The next slide, if you go to your level 14 to level 12, you can begin to see, including your level 15 and 16, comparably with other government departments in terms of senior management, we are 0.1%. And if we check other government departments, some of the departments are 2% and so forth. Go to the next slide. The next slide, where it is green, between your level 5 and your level 8, for the Police Act members, that is where we are having a bottleneck in terms of moving people between the post levels and closing the gaps, because this is the most critical area. These are the people that are on the ground, are doing policing, and that is where we have to increase our footprint there. The second slide talks to the Public Service Act. Now, currently the Public Service Act, if you look at the red, beyond the red we do not have any Public Service Act members. The numbers that you see there are members from the ministry. And that is the system that we have to consider within the organization. And the yellow one talks to those that we still have to regrade and move them to at least level 4. This next slide, I think we have spoken to, it is a pie chart that talks to the total fixed establishment of the police station. I've just mentioned the number. The second slide we also have spoken to, it shows what is happening at head office. And then go to the last one. The 36 talks about the rationalization process approach. The concept was presented at the management forum recently, was accepted, and there are specific expected outcomes and the timelines that have to be agreed on those issues. And that is the process that we that is where we are. The next slide that comes in are the secretariat slides, not the slides for the subs. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, General, for your presentation. Secretariat, you next. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. So the next few slides that I'm going to talk to are a study we conducted in 2016-17 and we finalised in March last year. Mm-hmm. It was a joint project with our provincial secretariat. We looked at national, provincial, and station level. We conducted interviews. Unfortunately, the sample size was very small. It was 54 stations. But it was enough to give us information about the challenges that we have in the resource allocation. I want to acknowledge General Mahato and his team. They were very cooperative in this process here. So the objective of the study chair was to look to provide an analysis of the allocation of resources at selected police stations by comparing the six establishments to the granted, to the theoretical requirement model. We also looked at identifying problematic areas pertaining to input and order sheets. General Makato alluded to that. It's both at police station level. And then to determine the process for distributing human resources at provincial level, we know the process, national sends numbers to provinces and then they allocate numbers thereafter. And then to identify the constraints that impact on the optimal utilization of human resources. So what are the issues? So the findings here are as follows. I'm going straight to the findings. Our study is much more comprehensive than what's in the seventh slide, but I'll give the highlights. So the one is the discrepancy in the demand, like General Mahatu spoke about, and then the fixed establishment. He said there's a 16% fixed establishment or granted, and then the actual human resources. What we found there was that all provinces felt that the theoretical human resource model that OD works with at national level was never fully implemented at stations. Like he said, it's 60% fully capacitated only. So that's one of the big things. The other one is that a proper assessment of the model cannot be conducted because this is not fully capacitated. So there's no 100% of the THRR at police stations. If you give us 100%, we'll be able to test it. And that's one of our recommendations, and I'll speak to that. Then provincial commissions retain the discretion to move personnel as per Section 12 of the Act, and this is based on the provincial commissioners. So national can blame province can blame station can blame national. The thing is, there is a process that has to be followed. It's legislated. And in the end, we can blame the provincial commissioner, but the provincial commissioner has needs in his provinces. So it's very easy. My first impression is say, let's amend the Act. But when you really look at it, the provincial commissioners have a discretion, and they base it on their needs. So then next slide, please. In terms of duty arrangements, we found that that what's on the duty sheet is not actually what's at the police station. So if you go to police station A and it says the duty sheet says there's 50 members, you find on that there's not actually 50 members because people are on leave and there's a whole variety of factors for that. They're on court duty. And then when members are transferred from station, so if somebody is transferred from station A to station B, that vacancy in station A remains for a very long time. It's not filled immediately. And then sometimes the budget goes with the person to station B, and then station A is sitting without a budget to fill that capacity. All provinces reported shortages of personnel in police stations, and I spoke about the vacancy, sorry. Then the other challenge relates to filling of vacant posts, which I've spoken to also. This is a provincial competency. That's important to note, that station commanders don't have the discretion to say, I need this position and I'm filling it now. It's left to the provincial office to then fill in that vacancy. And then in terms of sector policing, we found that they're not fully functional due to the resource constraints. So it's a model that perhaps will work very well if it's fully capacitated. Just back to the input sheets, we found that population figures contained in the input sheets sometimes differed from those in the actual record. So if one area had a population of 50,000, it was recorded differently in the sheet at the station. Record keeping was a big problem. When our researchers went to the stations, they couldn't find records of the demographic, the information that they needed. So this was a big problem. And then there was very bad filing practices. These may be small issues, but it's critical to your input sheet in the end and then what you're giving to the national level, provincial and national level. And then we also found that station commanders don't validate the input sheet. So you get the MIC filling, the information officer filling in the sheet, but it's not validated. So a lot of the sheets have blank spaces in them. So if you have 50 categories to fill in, there's blank sheets where subcategories are not filled in. And then, of course, there's also the issue of information technology, which fails the stations. And then data sometimes is lost, so it's not captured correctly. We must say that we also found that station management is undergoing training on the completion of the input sheets. So we found that some stations there was training on completion of the input sheets. Chair, sometimes you find that they just don't understand how to fill it, and that's one of the challenges when it comes to the input sheet. Chair, so those are just a few findings. It's not the full study. Just based on recommendations of data. So what we're saying that is that the theoretical human resource allocations have never been implemented. So what we say is let's test this, and we can engage the provincial commissioner, I mean, the national commissioner. If your THRR model is good and it's workable and it hasn't been tested, let's test it. So let's give 10% of the police stations across the country the full capacity that the THRR talks about, and then let's test it. Let's monitor it over 2 to 3 years to see if it's actually the model that doesn't work. Is it skills? Is it just management? So it can be anything. Or maybe it will just work. So let's give the THRR a chance to be tested. Chair, one of the findings that's not here, and it's a very critical finding, is when we looked at, Senator Makatu alluded to 120,000 members at police stations. Of that, 99,000, I think, is SAPS Act members at police stations. But we found, and this is, we looked at the annual report of SAPS over a five-year period, we found that of the 99,000, 57% were in administrative and management posts, and only 43% were doing frontline policing, actual policing. This doesn't even factor those who are on sick leave, those who are on leave, and those kind of things. So, and we use the annual report, so it's an audited report. So in the rationalization process, yes, you can say you increase it from 62% to 65%, but what are you doing about the administrative burden on police stations? And we know, we're being realistic here, we know, because we are also suffering that as public service administration departments, that administration bureaucracy is very heavy in departments. So it's not realistic to not have administration. But you can't have 57% of your station capacity being in administrative and management, and you're not, and 43% is only doing frontline policing. We think that station management should be actively involved in the theoretical human resource process to better understand the process. We found a lot of them didn't understand the THRR process. The performance management system must be reviewed to determine the adequacy of the performance. For example, high reporting in stations should not necessarily be regarded as a bad thing. It means people have confidence in the police and they're reporting. So we want to encourage that. So it can't be a performance measure for SAP. Or it can't be a bad performance measure for SAP. And then we're saying, look at alternative police policies and strategies to address the challenge of policing at local level and to lessen the burden on policing. Police station management should be given the prerogative to recruit members. Chair, this point I'm talking to is about when I come to the international comparisons we made. We looked at the model, and one of the models we looked at was England and Wales, where they devolve budgeting to station or cluster level. So we're saying let's change the way we think, let's change the way we do work, instead of letting budgeting be a national competency. And I've been told that there are challenges with regard to that, but I'm saying let's consider it, let's find a way to do it. So if you devolve budget to station level or cluster level, you are then pushing the burden on the station commander to then decide what he thinks is best for him. So if one station thinks he needs information technology, let it be his discretion. If somebody thinks I need more vehicles or I need 4x4s, let him decide that. Don't let it be done at national level. That's what we argue with. And General Scutte is looking at me. I know you have problems with that model, General. When we were doing the study, we were not sure about the moratorium on reservists, so we think that needed to be looked at, because there were a lot of issues and challenges coming out in terms of reservists who were not utilized properly. There must be standardization of data management processes, ongoing monitoring of the input sheet, and then we think station commanders must be assessed on the availability and correctness of the information on input sheets. I've spoken to that. And then the input sheets also need to be revised by the National Organizational Development. There were some issues that were coming out in regarding to the categories that we listed on that, and the weighting and the double counting in some places. So Chair, let me quickly speak to what we did is when we did the international study, we found that the reality is the country is facing budgetary constraints, and we have to look at that. We can't leave that out as well. So then we said, let's look at whether more personnel equates to more effective policing. So the more subs members you get, is that better for the police? So in this new financial year, we're looking at that study, Chair. So I mentioned England and Wales. So we looked at 9 countries, 3 in Africa and the rest all over the world, and we found that the England and Wales funding allocation model is very good. We're not talking about federalizing the police. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying give responsibility, discretion, and in the end, you're holding station and cluster commanders accountable for how they spend their money. And then you talk about a change management process. We're also talking about smart policing. We've got a whole chunk on smart policing and how you move, but we're also doing a policy on that, so it will be dealt with later. Chair, the next few slides from Poppy 3, you talked about the different types of international comparisons that we did. I'm not going to go into that. Suffice to say that while our THRR model may seem to be problematic, this is a common thing globally. We found that all over the world, their model of resourcing allocating is a problem. If they've had challenges, they've revised it and revised it all the time. So it's always a work in progress. So it's not like just in South Africa we're struggling with our model. It's a global issue. I'm going to skip through slide 45. Oh, okay, that's my conclusion, 45. Like I said, it's a very quick summary of the findings of the report, but we are also finalizing the state of policing report. Chair, you've been asking all the time about the state of policing. We had a presentation on the draft yesterday. It's got even more interesting findings on resource allocation. I can't talk to you now because I'm not very familiar with it. It's the new report. But give us an opportunity to present the chapter on resource allocation is very interesting. So it's something we will share with the National Commissioner and his team as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Umar. Before tea, we're going to go to the Social Justice Coalition. Mr. Weyers, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. I just want to acknowledge the Members of Parliament, the National Commissioner, Lieutenant Generals, the Major Generals, SAPS and POPCU leadership, and then representatives from the Civilian Secretariat of Police. I just want to note that the Social Justice Coalition is an advocacy organization, and so I'm here this morning as a critical voice, so just a heads up to members of the South African Police Service, and apologies straight off the bat to Major General Rabi and Makato, who I actually call out by name in our presentation this morning. Chair, before and while I wait for our presentation to just come up on the screen, I just want to wade into some of the conversation in the committee yesterday around the murder-suicides. So I am made to understand by media reports that the committee discussed the murder and suicide by Constable Tulani Buti over the weekend in Ocean View. Chair, to some extent, we think that this is not necessarily separated from the issue of police resource allocation. So Ocean View serves twice as many people as its neighbor, Fishhook, yet its fixed establishment is only 11 members more than Fishhook. So the difference is roughly 20,000 members of the population to 40,000 members of the population, and yet the additional bump that Ocean View gets for those 20,000 residents is 11 SAPS members. Ocean View has 88, Fishhook has 77, so per capita Ocean View is 218 police per 100,000, whereas Fishhook is 380. Over the last 4 years, Ocean View has had 117 murders, whereas Fishhook has had 5. That's 23 times more murders in Ocean View than in Fishhook. Over the last 4 years, Ocean View has had 183 sexual offences reported, whereas Fishhook has had 33, so that's 5.5 times more. The unemployment rate in Ocean View is 28%, in Fishhook it's 6%. And the reality is that the challenges
that Constable Chulani Buti faced in his precincts are very different to the challenges that are faced by constables in Fishhook, for instance. And so the burden, I think we all can agree, on Constable Chulani Buti would have been so much greater in the community that he was servicing. The level of violence that he was confronted with on a weekly basis had to be more, and yet the resources, the backup, wasn't available to Constable Buti. So I just wanted to flag that as an issue in the police resources debate this morning. Then I'm still just waiting for the slide to come up. Originally, the General Secretary of the Social Justice...
You can go ahead. With the, cool. The members got the briefing in front, so you can...
Perfect.
Shoot, thanks a lot.
So on the copies that I think you have, members, it would say Mandisa Janchi is doing this presentation. So I'd just like to apologize on behalf of the Deputy General Secretary of the Social Justice Coalition that she couldn't be here this morning, and I've had to step into her shoes. So just a brief background. The Social Justice Coalition is the democratic, public benefit membership-based social movement. The majority of our members are working class and poor individuals. The SJC has more than 2,000 members in informal settlements across Cape Town. In March 2016, the SJC, represented by the Legal Resources Center, along with our partner organizations, Equal Education, launched an application in the Equality Courts. That application aims to compel the South African Police Service to review the way in which they allocate police resources. The Nyanga Community Police Forum has also joined and was given leave to intervene as a third applicant in that case. Central to the court case that was heard on the 28th, 29th, and 30th of November, and then 2 additional days in February, was that in our reading of the data, almost without exception, relatively rich, predominantly white areas with very low contact rates have far more police officers for every 100,000 people than poor, predominantly black areas with high contact crime rates. Given that the THRR, which we've heard about this morning, broadly guides the allocations throughout the country, there can be little doubt that the system perpetuates this pattern of discrimination nationally. The SAFS fails to factor in the incidence of underreporting, which is not uniform across police precincts when allocating human resources. And then Section 12(3) powers of the SAFS Act afforded to provincial commissioners is misunderstood, limited in practice, and seldom used. To start, I just want to note a few concessions made by the state president and then senior SAFS officials. So, Chair, this morning you spoke to what President Ramaphosa said during his State of the Nation address, which was that a key focus this year will be the distribution of resources to police station level, and ultimately to restore capacity and experience at the level of which crime is most effectively combated. So emphasis throughout the presentation is ours, but on this slide we want to emphasize the phrase restore capacity and experience. This indicates that the President and his government are of the opinion that resources currently are not where they should be. This issue goes a step further when in his affidavit in response to our court case, Component Head of Organizational Development, Major General Makhato, that we heard from today, states, the explanation given for the differences in the allocation of police personnel was rational. They include the fact that policing resources deployed in each area had to be done in light of the existing infrastructure. He goes on to say that most of the policing areas where resources were lower than average are areas where police stations were built after 1994 to respond to the increase in informal settlements and the housing developments undertaken by the government. So here Major General MacArthur takes what President Ramaphosa says and has highlighted as an issue a step further by conceding that the issue of resource allocation is inequitable across racial and class lines. Here MacArthur concedes that black African poor working class communities, statistically the biggest beneficiaries of government housing developments, and the predominant residents of informal settlements have to contend with resources that are lower than average. President Ramaphosa has told us resources aren't where they are meant to be. Major General Makhato concedes poor black African communities are disproportionately impacted by this. There's a slide that then shows where Major General Makhato sits in the hierarchy of the South African Police Service. That slide is a bit dated. I took it from last year's annual report. And so apologies, National Commissioner, you're not reflected in that organogram.
But this is ultimately a concession from SAPS's senior management. If we look at two police precincts, so here we compare Diepsloot to Rosebank in Gauteng. Mkhwazi's claim that most of the policing areas with resources were lower than average or areas where police stations were built after 1994 is reflected in available data. Given the known challenges of policing, often high density informality, this breathtaking and equitable allocation of police resources, given number of residents to be served, protected and secured, is wrong. In Diepsloot, the police to population ratio is 1 police officer to every 1,301 residents. In Rosebank, it's 1 to every 101 residents. The national ratio is 1 to 369, according to SAPS's annual reports. But the percentage of dwellings that are shacks and shacks and backyards in Diepsloot is 55.9%, and in Rosebank it's 0.2%. Chair, just to note that I'm drawing the demographic picture of the specific police precincts throughout this presentation from the Institute for Security's Crime Hub, where they've gone and pulled census 2011 statistics through into the police precinct. But just to note too, Chair, is that an additional concession on this issue of resource allocation was communicated to us today by the Civilian Secretariat for Police. At slide 42 in SAS's presentation, we were told that the Civilian Secretariat for Police has recommended that in the absence of a fully adequate model for allocating resources, alternative policing approaches for more effective policing must be executed by SAPS. At slide 45, it is also stated that the police stations are still without critical resources. Then on the issue of underreporting, which is the next session I'll be looking at, the crime registrar at a national level, Major General Sikukunye, states that SAPS only counts recorded crimes, either crimes which were reported to SAPS or detected by SAPS. The inclusion of any other data would be a mere hypothesis, which is unsound statistically and at odds with the SASCAP model. So Major General Sikukunye said this in papers before the Equality Court. Now, this blinkered approach to available data, and specifically data that can assist in creating a clearer picture of true crime experienced by communities, is alarming. We argued it is a blinkered approach because statistically sound data exists, and then just this extract from the Victims of Crime Survey, which is a South African statistically quality assessment framework assessed document, so it meets the SASCAP requirements. While the Victims of Crime Survey cannot replace police statistics, it can be a rich source of information which will assist in the planning of crime prevention, as well as providing a more holistic picture of crime in South Africa. The data can be used for the development of policies and strategies, as well as for crime prevention and public education programs. And unfortunately, this wealth of information is seemingly being overlooked by SAPS in the THRR formula. Mkhwazi, in his affidavit, says that crimes against property have high reporting rates since insurers require a CAS number for purposes of processing these claims. We agree with that. However, it fails to appreciate, and SAS fails to appreciate, that the reality on the ground in a highly unequal society is going to differ between different communities. So again, the Victims of Crime Survey reveals these discrepancies. An estimated total of about 180,000, or 30% of all victims, report the theft of personal property to the police. So it's pretty low reporting rate. But over 82% of white victims reported to the police, compared to only 26% of black African victims. Discrepancies like these could have multiple contributing factors. We'd venture that this discrepancy could be a product of historical distrust in the police by black African communities, along with differing levels of insurance coverage between different communities. So in the next slide, we compare Inanda to Berea in KwaZulu-Natal. Inanda has a police population ratio of 1 to 773 residents, and Berea is 1 to 203 residents. the percentage of households earning less than 76,400 rand per year in Inanda is 91%, whereas in Berea it's 34%. These vastly different economic realities might contribute to vastly different insurance coverage levels between communities, which in turn mean the added incentive to report property-related crimes, which Major General MacArthur has acknowledged, must differ across communities. Then the large major section that I'm going to be looking at is the right to life as a prerequisite to the enjoyment of all other rights in the Bill of Rights. In his responding affidavit to the Equality Court case, Major General Rabi compared the Nyanga Police Precinct to the Cape Town Central Police Precinct to make the point that Cape Town Central is more deserving of more resources because it has more reported incidents of the 17 community-reported serious crimes. Now, in our papers, we did concede that Cape Town Central is an anomaly that would have to have a specific and nuanced approach given the daily influx of commuters and workers into the city. And so using the population of Cape Town Central as a benchmark there is problematic. But narrowly, using Major General Rabi's example, if we had to look at the issue of crime, there's a story to be told. So Major General Rabi is right. Nyanga, in 2016-2017, at 8,274 community reported serious crimes, whereas Cape Town Central had 15,952. Almost more than double. The police to population ratios, in Major General Rabi's argument, would then kind of make sense. Police to population ratio for Nyanga is 1 to 623 residents, whereas to Cape Town Central it would be 1 to 59. We then look at the 17 serious crime categories, and I've highlighted on the slide there some of those categories in red, some of those in black. It's clear that in Nyanga there is a higher incidence of contact crimes, whereas Cape Town Central has a higher incidence of property-related crimes with lots of theft out of or from motor vehicles. So 3,770 of those thefts from or out of a motor vehicle. Now, the picture starts to change if we factor in the vastly divergent levels of reporting property-related crimes, and so remove just some of those categories, the picture, and so in removing just some of those categories, the picture starts to look vastly different. If we remove the categories that speak to theft, all of a sudden, Nyanga has 6,914 serious crimes, whereas Cape Town Central then just has 4,317. Members, in the next slide, Now, if you foreground the spirit of the Constitution, of the Bill of Rights, and if we see the right to life as being a prerequisite for the enjoyment of all other rights, if we heed the wisdom of the Constitutional Court judges, here I'm quoting from Kruipum in the specific slide, we must agree that SAPS is a much greater responsibility to people than to property. You can only enjoy the other rights if you have the right to life. And so then the fact that Nyanga had 281 murders in 2016-2017, whereas Cape Town Central had only 11 murders. But in Nyanga, we have one police officer to 623 residents, and again in Cape Town Central, 1 to 59. It doesn't make sense. This allocation of police personnel is morally wrong and reveals that SAPS generally fails to appreciate, in our opinion, that Black Lives Matter. With the next slide, apologies, the one that would be in your pack, we have amended, so we managed to get the actual transcript, which is now part of the court record, of the engagement from Senior Counsel for SAPS, Mr. Masuku, to questions and prompting from Justice Boklana in the Equality Court. And so our framing in the slide that you have was maybe a bit reductive. But just to go through why we've ultimately put in your pack that you have, and we have made sure that the amendment is circulated to members as well, is that Mr. Masuku goes and he actually sets up a comparison between the theft of a purse and the murder of a child. So he puts those two scenarios on the table. Justice Kwana then prompts him and says, so you're saying for shoplifting, theft, and all that, they should be treated in the same way as murder and contact violent crimes? And to that, Mr. Masuku's response is, so yes. Then just around the confusion around Section 12.3 of the SATS Act. In our mind and in court papers, we've argued that that confusion exists at a legislative level. In Section 12.3 of the SATS Act, a provincial commissioner shall determine the distribution of the strength of the service under his or jurisdiction in the province among the different areas, station areas, offices, and units. So just to highlight there, the strength of the service at station areas, that's included. Now we understand that that would obviously override the regulations in the regulations of SATS documents, but yes, it is there. So the regulation says, Regulation 3.3, the distribution of the strength of the force among the different divisions, police districts, station areas, I'm flagging that again, offices, units, or other institutions of any nature whatsoever shall, subject to the provisions of this regulation, be determined by the National Commissioner. So that falls under the section under the responsibilities of the National Commissioner. Now, again, sorry, Major General Robbie, that confusion exists at a SAT senior managed level. So Major General Robbie has said in two different contexts over a period of a few years two different things that speak to the understanding of Section 12.3 and that then speak to Regulation 3.3. In one instance, he says the theoretical thresholds are set not to be exceeded during the distribution process. And Major General MacArthur has also kind of spoken about that this morning, is that the THRR will use the very provincial commissioners will use the very same instrument, the THRR, and then their discretion to allocate resources. But he added the proviso there that it has to remain within the kind of parameters set by the THRR. So there's a limitation here on provincial commissioners' powers. Robbie then, in his affidavit in the Police Resource Court case, says it arises from a misconception that Section 12 of the SAP Act does not give the provincial commissioners the power to distribute police resources in accordance with provincial crime trends and priorities. But the reality is elsewhere that they're saying that there are limitations to that power, and we need to unpack those limitations. Then, just to conclude, in presenting the Civilian Secretariat for Police's integrity study this morning, the full study, by the way, which is not yet publicly available, so what we've been able to deal with this morning is only a part of a much larger study, I imagine, and so if I misrepresent any of those findings, I'll put the onus of that onto the fact that that document hasn't been made public. But yes, this morning the Civilian Secretariat has revealed that they agree with much of what we have argued in court about the inefficiencies in the THRR. They believe that SAPS's personnel allocation model must be reviewed, slide 46, that the current system is not a fully adequate model for allocating resources, slide 42, that the data captured is incorrect or is compromised, lost, not validated, slide 39, that the data collected might not be relevant, and that the process of distributing, just on that point of relevance, there was flagged in the presentation itself, the issue of double counting and a questioning of the weighting of those various categories in the THRR, and that the distribution of human resources at a provincial level must be determined. So I don't know whether that was a study to see in how it was being done or whether that was a study to then actually figure out how it should be done, but that's unclear from the presentation. The SJC and our co-applicants in our court case have gone further. We've gone further by saying that this flawed system also discriminates on the basis of race and poverty. We're saying that that, to some extent, is a product of double counting, of the weighting of the criteria, of the relevance of some of that criteria, the issue that underreporting that is not equal across police precincts is not being taken into consideration. So we're saying that it discriminates on the basis of race and poverty. We're saying that the numbers, the data that's available, and that we made available to the Portfolio Committee of Police, data of fixed establishments for all 1,144 police precincts that had never been made available to the Portfolio Committee. The committee had asked for that data in 2005 and 2007, and in both instances, SAPS had denied you access to that data, which, in our opinion, very much limited your ability to provide oversight. But even senior SAPS management, so Major General MacArthur, in acknowledging that areas with high levels of informality or reliance on government housing have lower than average police resources. So in the court case, at least, and an oral argument in courts, and so not necessarily from SAPS. And to be clear, we're not saying SAPS intentionally discriminates against black African communities. We're saying the intricacies and the complexity of the THRR, in effect, has a discriminatory outcome, and for that reason needs to be overhauled. But SAPS's counsel very much argued that this discrepancy is right because ultimately black lives lost are comparable to handbags reported as stolen, that those things should be treated as equal. Of course, the Social Justice Coalition doesn't agree. The court processes are ongoing. The judges have asked for some additional documentation from both parties. We're hopeful that the judgment in that court case will be handed down in the next few months. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Reyes. Members, we will take literally a four-minute tea break. Just get your cups of tea, and then we'll get Pop Crew itself to conclude. Thank you very much. 4 minutes, members. Thank you.